You're listening to KRFC Fort Collins.
Silver pool of light. People who surround her feel the benefit of it. It makes you count. She holds you captivated in a pound. Suddenly I see. This is what I wanna be. Suddenly I see. Why the hell it means so much to me?
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told. I'm Leslie Botha, your host, and it's great to be with you on this Monday evening in Fort Collins, Colorado. It's
a few minutes after 6 o'clock. I've got a great show coming up tonight, and glad that you're here to join us. David Katzmeier is going to be on the show. We're going to be bringing him on in just a moment. He is a colleague of mine. I'm proud to call him a colleague. He's also a fellow member of the Cycles Research Institute. Both David and I spend a great deal of time researching natural cycles, of which hormone cycles are one of them. And the show tonight is going to show you exactly how events like, 9/11, financial crises, stock market crises, weather like Hurricane Irene, are all predictable if you understand the cycles of time. And that's what David Katzmeier is going to be addressing tonight. We're going to tie it all up, tie it together. It's going to be a fascinating, fascinating interview. And I hope that both men and women are all going to listen tonight, because this has everything to do not only with the cycles in our own body, our biorhythms, if you will, but also the cycles of time that map out our future, the cycles that govern our communities, the cycles that govern our country, and the cycles that govern our globe. All of this coming up tonight on Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told. Before we start with David, I do have a piece of hormone news for you. I think this is really fascinating. This may make some great fodder for some of those Bronco parties that are going to go on here this evening. This article came out of National Geographic News, posted and published on September 7th. Why most men's ring fingers are so long. I'm going to tie this into hormones, and that's exactly what National Geographic News did. Finger length is linked to aggression, musical ability, and sexual orientation. Is your ring finger longer or shorter than your index finger? Everybody look! The reason for the difference is in our hormones. A new study in mice shows for the first time. Before birth, the sex hormones estrogen and testosterone control genes that in turn dictate finger length, the study found. Like us, mice naturally have both hormones in their bodies. Differences in finger length have been repeatedly linked to a range of human traits, from aggression to musical ability to sexual orientation. This is the time to be looking at your partner's fingers, everybody. There are also connections to health problems such as autism, depression, heart attacks, and cancer. It's difficult to look at an adult or a newborn child and determine what was happening during their embryonic development, said study leader Zhengwei Zhang, a developmental biologist at the Howard Hughes Medical Institute in Florida. But the discovery that digit proportions reflect the prenatal hormone environment helps us to explain all those correlational studies, said Zhang, who works in the laboratory of study co-author Martin Cohn. Scientists had already suspected that sex hormones played a part in finger length, but causality had never been demonstrated. No one had ever tested the hypothesis that these hormones directly caused the digits to grow differently in males and females. What's more, the study is valuable in finding that hormones begin affecting us much earlier than thought, as early as the first trimester of pregnancy. Many scientists have believed that hormones are more active after birth. This isn't just an interesting curiosity that's focused on the hand. It really says something about the behavioral and developmental biology of adults, he noted. Overall, the results suggest that our finger length can be almost a readout of a person's hormonal balance during a very narrow window of development in the womb. For instance, if a man has a longer index finger than ring finger, he may have had an elevated dose of estrogen at some point during his development, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But in some cases, such irregularities can lead to medical conditions in adulthood. Exposure in the womb to synthetic chemicals that mimic or block hormones, for example, has been linked to health problems in children and adults. Previously, it was difficult to know if a mother had been exposed to a chemical during pregnancy that disrupted hormone activity in her child. Now our findings suggest such an event might leave a signature, Cohn said. That might be a useful tool for figuring out the cause of a disease, malformation, or even a behavioral trait. So fingers tell a lot more about us than whether we're number one or not. Wow. As you're driving down the highway tonight, they can actually, according to the study, which is on my blog at holyhormones.com and pasted on Facebook at Leslie Botha, that they show hormone imbalance in the womb. Another reason why it's so, so very important for women and men to maintain a proper hormone balance between mm-hmm. their sex hormones, estrogen and testosterone. That's going to tie in somehow, and we'll make it tie in, because that really means that not only are hormones ruling everything, but cycles rule everything. And again, my guest tonight is David Katzmeier. He's here to speak with us about the cycles of time, how we can actually understand the lessons in history that have been taught to us by understanding cycles. But more importantly, we can understand the future and understand and predict the crises that hit us on an emotional, intellectual, and physical level. And according to David, just as you can find a chart of coming ocean tides that move in rhythm and a calendar for phases of the moon that moves in rhythm, we can perceive the timelines for global intellectual, emotional, and physical crisis because the cycles move in rhythms as regular as the ocean and the moon. David, are you with us?
I am here.
And thank you so very much for joining us tonight.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
First of all, I do want to say and tell listeners again that David and I are professional colleagues. We work together at the Foundation for the Study of Cycles, comparing notes, sharing research, realizing that a lot of the brilliant work that David has done, and he is a pioneer in this field, has a lot to do with the work that I have done in researching the hormone cycle, the menstrual cycle, as a natural cycle of the universe. And I'm pleased to have him on the show for the first time and welcome you warmly, David.
Thank you.
So, cycles as a measurement of time, as predictors of events, how did this concept all evolve for you?
Well, it first struck me many years ago when I became fascinated with a very unoriginal concept, the axiom that the pattern of everything is in anything. It was around that time that the word fractals came into use, invented by a mathematician named Mandelbrot. And we began to become more and more aware of how we can see patterns, great and small, replicating themselves, patterns within patterns. And around that time, this was back in the 1970s, the study of biorhythms became popular, and people were getting books, and you could even get little calculators to plot your biorhythms. And we began to understand how there are rhythms within us. Beyond the circadian rhythm, beyond the menstrual cycle, there is a physical high and low that we go through. There is an emotional high and low that we go through, and an intellectual high and low that we go through. And these are cycles that are born into us and move regularly through a span of weeks before the cycle repeats throughout our lives.
And we're going to be defining some of that tonight, and it's very fascinating work because I think part of what you are saying here is that it's the cycles and our understanding of the cycles within us that help us create the community outside of us.
Well, when we understand that a nation is like a person, a nation has a body, it has a heart, and it has a mind. So if you think of it as a collective consciousness, you can think of it as going through stages of development and having the same good days and bad days as does a person. There are philosophers throughout history who have identified that a nation will go through the stages of life. Oswald Spengler identified that. Giovanni Bautista identified that, saying that a nation will go through a birth, youth, adolescence, adulthood, maturity, senescence, and eventually death. And not only do you have the life cycle from cradle to grave being replicated in a nation over many, many, many years, but you also have other aspects of a human being that can be found in a character of a people. One of the aspects that replicates itself as we look on the grander scale in the collective consciousness of a nation is that a nation, too, has biorhythms, as it were, as do each of us.
So let's bring this back to biorhythms within the individual. Hormones aside, though hormones and all of this certainly relate to each other, but the reason perhaps why we're feeling good one day and then inexplicably feeling so horrible the next day, other than bad news, which is coming more and more frequently these days, can be due more to the biorhythms, the highs and lows in our bodies, as much as anything else.
Yes, you have the internal rhythms that are moving by their own clockwork, and then you live in the world of physical causality, which is going to bring you the events of the day. So it's always a combination of the two. When you look at how history repeats itself but doesn't duplicate itself, you can identify that there are tendencies for energies to be moving upward and downward and affecting different aspects of society. These internal rhythms will continue to move within a nation so that you can see that a nation will have a tendency towards a good economy or a declining economy. It can be rising with enthusiasm during the 60s, which has now become a title, or are we going down into Generation X? And there may be a little apathy. Are we having a very strong time? Are we building up the production of our durable goods and our military, and are we disco dancing, or are we just becoming a bit complacent and overweight? I've just identified how we go through different intellectual expansions and contractions, or different emotional highs and lows, and different times of varying levels of strength physically. A nation will do that. And it will. What we don't realize is that we may be replicating the cycles within ourselves in the civilizations we create, but these cycles to repeat take tens of years. So we don't often live long enough to understand, to put it into a fishbowl, to see how these things are moving. And beyond that, there are other cycles that we can talk about in the world that last even longer.
Well, you said tens of years, but I'm thinking you meant tens of thousands of years or hundreds of years or when
well,
you say
yes,
it takes...
And there have been cycles that have been found in all these levels. Let me explain.
Sure.
Biorhythms in a person are three, the main ones, and there are additional ones. I can name people who have identified ones beyond the main three, but the main three are physical, emotional, and intellectual, so that there's a 23-day cycle of high and low moving in us all. A 28-day emotional cycle of high and low probably correlates to the moon.
And the menstrual cycle. We know that one really, really well. Men know that one,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So.
And absolutely. That's right. And it's also, tied in with the duration of the emotional cycle, interestingly enough. And then there is the 33-day intellectual cycle. So we have these three cycles, mind, heart, and body, 23 days, 28 days, and 33 days, physical, emotional, intellectual. Okay, now we're talking about a person. But what happens when you talk about an entity that is larger than a person? Then
well,
what comes to play is larger entities are slower to change.
Sure, before we go there, I need to direct people to your website.
Okay.
David has fabulous maps on his website, which is calorhythms.com. And it's calorhythms, K-A-L-A, meaning cycles within, cycles without, calorhythms, RHYTHMS.com. And so for those of you listening online this evening, you can certainly go to David's website and you can get the images of what we're relaying here over the radio. And the maps are absolutely fabulous. Again, you're listening to Holy Hormones, Honey, the Greatest Story Never Told. This is one of those stories, Anne. We keep coming up with these stories. David Katzmeier is my guest. He is on the advisory board for the Cycles Research Institute, as well as I am, now 7 years old, and a colleague and professional researcher on what he is calling the cycles of time. Didn't mean to interrupt you, David, but I just want people to really understand where you're coming from.
Well, I thank you, Leslie, for telling people where they can find out more. With recent updates to the site, I've moved it from collarrhythms.com to collarrhythms.org, but it doesn't matter if you go to collarrhythms.com, you'll be automatically directed to collarrhythms.org, K-A-L-A-rhythms.org. So, I told you what I told you, so I can tell you this.
Yep, oh, go ahead.
Well, the biorhythms that have been found and now widely accepted to exist within each of us gives us a starting point for understanding how some philosophers and scholars of behavior have drawn a correlation between the development of a person and a nation. So how do we bridge cycles within ourselves and the fact that a nation behaves like a person on a greater scale of time? What about the biorhythms? Does a nation have a body, a mind, and a heart? Do these two move in rhythm? Could they be collarrhythms of a nation? Well, the way that would work is you would have to first define what is the body of a nation, the heart of a nation, and the mind of the nation. In an industrialized Western civilization like the United States, the body of the nation can be easy to define. It would be the quality of our durable goods, the readiness of our military forces, the activity, the level of sports. More sports heroes come out during physical highs, and so forth. Even statistically, the consumption of red meat versus less. It moves with the physical cycle. This is the physical aspect of a nation. And what about the heart of a nation? A nation does have fluctuating levels of enthusiasm and speculation versus being a little bit passive and not so outward. And that is the emotional cycle that gives us highs and lows. If you look in the 1890s, which was called the gay 90s, that was a very exuberant time, kind of breaking out of old, Elizabethan era, Victorian era restraints. And then the turn of the century was a downward time of reform. But then we rose up and had the roaring 20s. Then we came down during the Great Depression. And then we rise up again, and we have the 50s and the 60s, which were certainly exuberant for those of us old enough to remember. Then we came down after the disco era and had Generation X. Then the New Age rose in the 1990s, and now we have this era of spirituality that pervaded throughout the last decade. We're going in a bit of a decline now. And here you see a tide. Now, if you live to be 500 years old, you'll understand that these things are coming and going. But when you're born into the middle of a cycle, and you only see a couple of cycles in your lifetime, you don't understand it. And intellectually, we had a high in the 20s, and then a high in the 60s, and believe it or not, we're still in a high now, and the sciences and computer sciences have been burgeoning. So these are the collarrhythms of a nation, cycles moving in highs and lows from the point when we began. Our birth was the American Revolution, when we broke away from our mother country of England.
And these maps of these cycles are on David's very extensive website at kalarhythms.org, and that's rhythm spelled with an H, K-A-L-A-R-H-Y-T-H-M-S, kalarhythms.org. Very fascinating science. Who is starting to look at this seriously? You mentioned to me earlier today when I was trying to get some information from you that people want you right now. They're needing you right now. They want your information. What is the turn?
Well, this was first conceived during a bit of a cyclic low and emotionally and intellectually. And I knew as I was studying this that we were going to come into a time when the emotional cycle and the intellectual cycle would rise again. It's interesting that in the 1990s, it was when the emotional cycle and the intellectual cycle during that decade both broke back up into the high half. And then we got this wonderful term during that time called emotional intelligence. What we judge as intelligent is something that changes from time and culture and region. And we tend to measure everything by our own yardstick. So usually intelligence is defined whatever we're good at, and anyone who's dumb is doesn't do what we do. And but we're beginning to find that as we understand ourselves more, we can understand others more. Now, who was it that said there are three types of men who don't understand women, and that is young men, middle-aged men, and old men. And so, but what
happens?
I didn't
say that one.
Well, it because it takes understanding of oneself to understand the world around them. I mean, and this, we've come out of the machine age, and during the machine age, we had great achievements, and we did a lot to cure a lot of diseases, but this, you know, with disease will continue, but we built wonderful things and monumental achievements, but emotionally, it was a physical high, not emotional high. And during that Industrial Revolution, men had two emotions, which were anger and whiskey. And but since then, as people begin to understand themselves, and it's not just emotional understanding, it's also an understanding of the mind and understanding how the body moves. And when we, you know, what is here is elsewhere. Tat vamasi, that's the Sanskrit for that. This is a very old axiom. You can understand why we're changing our trends, why a sports car is going to come out and red is popular, or black cars are going to be everything that you see, or the width of neckties, the height of skirts, the type of music. Is it going to be rock and roll, or is it going to be rap, or is it going to be retro? And all of these are moving within stages of the cycle. How can we put all this together? How can we read all of the newspapers and watch the television programs and scan our RSS feeds to be able to take all of this in? Well, the way you understand that is not by taking in all of the data, but by understanding the pattern.
And that's brilliant. And I have to go back to the couple of comments that you made about men and understanding women. I mean, I think the big crux for all of us is that we have lived in what we have perceived to be linear time for so long. Something that's very much testosterone driven, as testosterone levels are fairly stable, but it's the day after hour after hour, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. And here women are changing every single day during their menstrual cycle based on hormone levels and how that's affecting the brain. And so, you know, and that's where the crux is. We've made fun of women because of the changes in their cycle from highs to obviously premenstrual lows. Pharmaceutical companies have had a heyday in manufacturing drugs that eliminate the menstrual cycle altogether for years at a time now. And it's been my position, along with David's position, that these rhythms in our body are not only just crucial to our own health and well-being, and the hormone cycle, the endocrine cycle, is the foundation of women's health and well-being, but that these cycles also reflect outwards, and living with these natural cycles helps us to understand the other cycles in our communities, in our nation, and in our universe. And this is where a marriage of our work comes together. Couldn't you say that, David? And we've had these talks
Absolutely.
In Albuquerque. And this has been my stance for 30 years, that the menstrual cycle is crucial. And women were held in high regard because of this cycle for many, many moons, ago. And it's time that we come back to that natural rhythm so we can start understanding the rhythms of our universe. David, you made a fascinating comment when we were talking earlier over the weekend. is that a day in individual time is 24 hours. A day in the country is actually 365 days. And I hope
that is correct.
And explaining this, and a day in the world is actually 12 years. Can you really go into this for us?
Yes, because of the natural approximation that a cycle will make to outside forces. Earlier in the conversation, we were talking about the 28-day emotional cycle in biorhythms, because there's a 23-day physical, 28-day emotional, and 33-day intellectual. Well, the 28-day emotional cycle in the evolution of the world was probably heavily influenced by the moon, as is the menstrual cycle. And there you see that there's a natural approximation of one of the cycles, and I can give other examples of the intellectual relating to the sun and so forth. And there are examples on collarbones.org about this. But on that point, you will find that as we look at the biorhythms in ourselves compared to the collarbones of a nation, the nation will move in many years. The same cycles are 28 years for the physical cycle, 36 years for the emotional cycle, and 44 years for the intellectual cycle. So here we going from 23 days, 28 days, 33 days, to 28 years, 36 years, and 44 years for the same cycles to move us all as a collective in a nation. Now, when you look at the 36-year cycle, it's kind of interesting. It correlates to the moon again, because the moon has approximately 18-year cycles in the tilt of its orbital plane. It has to, they're called the Saros cycles. And so here you see the emotional cycle on the biorhythm level of a person, or the emotional cycle in the country, is relating to various cycles or many cycles in the moon. So the moon affects us emotionally. And you could go on beyond that into the world cycles, where there's a 336-year cycle, a 432-year cycle emotionally, and a 528-year cycle intellectually. 336 is that's physical. There is something about the emotional cycle on that level, these megarhythms. The 432-year cycle has a significant relationship to the precession of the equinoxes. The precession of the equinoxes is from what we get the zodiac. All of that's on the site. But to get back to the point, why do we have this relationship? That a day for a person is 24 hours, a day for a country lasts a year, and a day in the world lasts 12 years. That's because of a particular element in the cycles known as the crossover.
The crossover, and before we even get to that point, there is some significance when we entered the year 2000. It was the beginning of a 12-year cycle?
A 12-year period within the cycle.
And what were the emotional highs and lows and intellectual highs and lows during that time?
Okay, now we're going to be some cycling here. Now that we've taken the training wheels off, let's cycle through history. In the world, there are physical highs and lows, emotional highs and lows, and intellectual highs and lows. Without going through history, I'm just going to look back at the century from which we came. The physical cycle was high throughout most of the last century. That gave us the machine age. That's the systems of power and dominance, hierarchies of such. Might makes right, power, guns, and money. The concept of total war, the survival of the fittest, not the wisest. At the same time in the world, I'm leading up to the crisis we're in, we had an emotional low during the Victorian repressive era, and we had an intellectual low. What does it mean in a century when you have a physical high, an emotional low, and an intellectual low? Physical high, emotional low, intellectual low. How about this? We outbuild our own sense. And we don't care. We have come up with more creative ways to do dumb things. And in addition to building so many wonderful things, we have poisoned the waters and the air. We've hunted animals to extinction. We have gone into countries and pretty much said, well, that's a nice community, but we don't care about your culture. Get off of it. We got to get to the iron ore and the gold underneath. And so get out of here. Here come the bulldozers. And we didn't care about what it was doing. It was very short-sighted, and we, you know, radioactivity. And well, we know the story, right? We all know the story.
Well, we have caused massive destruction. Absolutely. Because the imbalance of the cycles, the trends, the physical and mental, or physical, emotional, intellectual. High physical. More war during that time?
Yeah, we have a greater tendency to war because we're more aggressive when we're more expansive during that time. So, yes, absolutely.
And so the time frame that we're still talking about is year 2000.
Now,
leading up
this leads us up to this century. Now, what's happened during this century? All throughout the 20th century, the low emotional cycle and the low intellectual cycle were rising. While the physical cycle crossed down through the period of crisis, the middle point, in 1978 to 1990, 12-year period. It began in 1978. Let me explain what is a crisis. Whenever a cycle crosses from low up into a high, or from high down into a low, it passes the middle. That's the point of turbulence, crisis, that you need to shake things up in order to put yourself in a different position. In psychoharmonics, that's when the equilibrium is neither high nor low. It's a transitional, vulnerable period. When it's rising up, you have a crisis that is the birth pangs of a new era, and you continue to rise and build anew. After you've done that, and you finally cross back low again, you go through the midpoint of crisis coming down, but that is when castles crumble, empires fall. And then you go down, pull up the drawbridge, and regress, look back, reflect, and you're subdued. The point is, there are two times in a cycle that you go through a transitional crisis, and it's always in the middle. So, when the industrial revolution of the 20th century ended because the physical high of the 19th and 20th century crossed down, that began in 1978. And it takes 12 years to get through that period because it's a crossover day all day. And that day lasts for 12 periods. So what happened from 1978 to 1990 is the Shah of Iran fell. We had the Iranian hostage crisis. The Berlin Wall fell. The Iron Curtain fell. The great, powerful Soviet Union fell. You had the military might of China stood down by a man before a tank in Tiananmen Square, because what was happening, might didn't make right anymore. You know why? Because some of the people that would be carrying the rifles didn't feel it was the right thing. I don't know. I don't think a battle scene over here would really have feng shui. What do you think, Clyde? I don't know. I don't want to fight anybody. So what's happening? So why would that happen? Well, that 12-year period brought the end of the machine age. It's already over, and what we're going to do is wind down and go into what always happens when you enter the low, the cleanup period. This is when you pick up the beer cans from the party before. You throw out the pizza boxes. Only in this case, we start cleaning up the waters. We start doing something about radioactivity. We blow the whistle on fracking, and we find alternatives to energy that are not as destructive, and on and on and on. Well, everything that's happening, and it'll continue to happen. Now, I told you that to tell you this. While that machine age ended, there's an example of a crisis. Now, enter the emotional intellectual cycles that continue to rise and do something that happens only once every so many thousands of years or a few times within that period. We have the emotional cycle is breaking up into the high half now. That began in the year 2000, giving us a 12-year period of emotional crisis. And guess what else is happening? The intellectual cycle is doing the same thing. because of mathematics, it just so happens that at this time, it is crossing up. We have a simultaneous double crossover where these two cycles, emotional and intellectual, are breaking up into the high, so that the next couple of centuries and more will be an emotional high, an intellectual high, and the physical will be low throughout most of the next century. It's going to be effectively reversed from the 20th century.
Very fascinating. And if you're just joining us, well, I hope you're not just joining us because you're missing one heck of an interview. David Katzmeier, advisory board member for the Cycles Research Institute. He has his own website at calorhythms.org. A well-renowned researcher on the cycles of time is with us. And we are starting to put things into perspective as we all feel that our lives are out of control, as our country's out of control, the deficit is out of control, the stock market's out of control. And David's actually explaining to us that this is false. Everything follows cycles and patterns. And if understanding the cycles in yourself, you can start to understand the cycles outside of yourself. And you were saying that the physical, all right, is going down now. And what year did this start, David? In 1990?
Actually, in 1978.
1978, that the physical cycle started going down. And as he explained before, the physical denotes changes in production, territoriality, and strength, sense of materialism, the military, how we play sports, our health and fitness, and they rise and fall together. The emotional cycle now, which is on the rise, changes our sense of idealism, inspiration, and faith. A national mood is reflected in our styles, practice of religion, market speculation, entertainment, and general outlook. That makes a lot of sense. The intellectual cycle affects invention, learning, and interests. Shifts come in government policies, court decisions, commerce, student performance, and technologies. You can even tie this down to how your student is performing in the classroom based on cycles. So once again now, starting in the 90s, there were the crossover points. You were brilliant in your capturing the history.
So the fall of communism, as it was called, the fall of the Soviet Union, that country doesn't even exist anymore, and the great transition of China, which is moving into the new era. And what is the new era? Well, that's being defined by these two cycles coming high. It's being defined by a new era of reason and invention, technologies, and the emotional cycles adding to that, the era of romanticism. That's not been talked about as much as the rise of intellectualism, but that is emerging as well. Both going through the birth pangs of a new era. So we got through the transition of the machine age ending in the latter 20th century, but we were caught by surprise when this 12-year period happened, that where the two cycles began to cross up in the year 2000, meaning that for 12 years, a day in the world, anywhere in that period, we could find all kinds of crises. But what kinds? You were defining aspects of behavior. You were defining physically based as how our territoriality, our military readiness and willingness to fight. And so that's physical behavior. Emotional behavior is, it influences religion. It influences the arts and our writing and so forth. Now, as far as religion is concerned, in this 12-year period, we're seeing a magnificent outbreak. I'm using magnificent to mean large, of the so-called holy wars, one of the greatest oxymorons of all time, holy wars. And this this brought about the attacks in Washington and New York in 2001, because this is not so much a fight over territory per se, but over ideology, because physical is territorial, give me land. Emotional is an ideal.
Religion.
So it is a religious war. It is an emotional upset. We're having a bad day.
Well, we had one hell of a bad day, and as we know, as we commemorated the 10th anniversary of 9/11, predictable? I mean, really, could that have
been? No. You can predict the tendencies of energy, but not the actual events of the future. So I had predicted in advance that this was going to be a turbulent time, but I'm telling you after the fact that there is no way I could have told you that the Twin Towers would have been attacked by airplanes and that the Pentagon would have been attacked by an airplane. Never would have said that.
So we would have known, just even looking at the cycles of the time and the maps of time that you have laid out, that when these crossover points occur, that some sort of crisis may be the result of that, not knowing what that might be.
Yes, exactly. I'll give you another example. Since the intellectual cycle is also crossing over at the same time, this has the potential for what I had called in the 1980s a possible global economic collapse, because the intellectual cycle influences commerce and trade and banking and business and so forth, as well as education and a lot of other things. But what we're going to feel immediately is what's going to happen in commerce and business. So what happened? Well, we had the great collapse in 2008, the savings and lending and the banking, and this affected things worldwide. The government of Iceland was completely eradicated. It collapsed completely and was replaced by an entirely new government. So this was a calamity the likes of which we've never seen, and the government is putting together spending the likes of which have never been seen before, even by our government, times two, times three, times four, times whatever, and it is in response to the greatest crisis in terms of dollars that we've ever seen. And this is happening during the intellectual cycle crossover. This is a crisis in decision. We made bad decisions. And just as the emotional cycle can give you irritability and bad moods, the intellectual cycle can give you crisis in decision. You're going to make mistakes. We're making mistakes while we're in a bad mood. So we're having holy wars and economic collapse when they are due.
That's rough.
That's cycles.
That's rough. When are we coming out of this thing?
We're almost out of it. The 12-year period, or a day in the world, because the cycles are larger, because larger entities are slower to change, lasts only for 12 years. This began in spring of 2000, and it continues into spring of 2012, next year. After that, the only thing I can say is, yes, we will still have troubles, we'll still have war, we'll still have economic problems from time to time. But I think it's pretty fair to say that in this last 12-year period, we've seen some unprecedented compression of exaggerated events, the likes of which we will not have a tendency for quite a long time because of the cycles.
Well, I can hear the collective sigh of relief. Because it has been a long 12 years. There is no doubt about
that. Well, I can give
you
a sigh of happiness, too, because my study of history has suggested this, that whenever you go through the crisis of a cycle crossing up and you go through the turbulent midpoint of transition, it is the birth pangs of a new era. We are moving into a new era of reason and romanticism. And so now we're not so much relying on the old models of hierarchies based on power and dominance. That's a physically based model of physically based behavior. Now what we're doing is we're having a more interactive systems that are being shown in businesses that are using cooperation and interaction and networking how they work. And this is a more humane sort of, more human, not humane, a more human way, and it's also a smarter way. It's what the systems are moving from the old flow charts of command to what I like to call a polycephalous network. So if you want to understand the difference between the sunrise businesses versus the sunset businesses, understand that there is physical behavior, emotional behavior, and intellectual behavior, and the sunrise businesses are the ones that are moving into networking their commands, networking their system, and putting away the old models because it's time. That's how we understand the world around us, by understanding ourselves first, because the world is moving to the same cycles.
So it's more
larger.
It's more like throwing a stone into a pond and then watching the ripple effect go out.
Yes. And you can, as you follow the concentric rings that come from the center, imagine yourself as a center there's no the center, except Bindu. And think of the concentric circles of there is the person, then there's one's family, there's one's community, there's one state, one nation, and then the world. And you're going to find that there are cycles moving in every one of these circles that go out from the center of a person. But as you go out, notice the rings are larger. So it is in the world, that the cycles are longer and longer as you step up through the concentric circles into the systems in which we live.
Question for you, what happens if we are not aware of these cycles within ourselves and how our individual, collective individual cycles, inner cycles, are affecting the outer world, if you will, vice versa? Is that creating any sort of havoc? I mean, we've got more people unaware of cycles, natural cycles, and the cycles that govern us than there are that are aware.
Sometimes it does not cause a problem, but sometimes it does. I'll give you some examples. If you look at the cycles of a nation, now we've just fractaled down to cycles that last tens of years for physical, emotional, intellectual trends. There are people that would maybe begin the production on a movie because a certain genre was in. Maybe Cops and Robbers has been big. So they start filming it. And by the time it's released, the cycle has just changed. But the cycle was very active at the time they began producing it. Had they known how long the trend was destined to be and where they were in that trend, would they have begun production on a film of that genre and released it to have a box office failure? I can name examples. I do name examples on the site. That's how not understanding where we are in a cycle can affect you. You want to make decisions, but then there are plenty of people that look at what everybody else is doing, decide they do the same, and it works for them because you're still a part of the cycle before it changes.
Timing is everything.
Yes.
Timing
is everything. And knowing whether that's going to work, there's two paths for success. One is look at what everybody else is doing and do it. No, what everybody else is doing successful and do it. The other pattern for success is look at what everybody else is doing that's successful and do anything but that. The difference between those two strategies as to whether they will work or not is where we are in the cycle.
Brilliant, brilliant work. 12 minutes before the hour, 7 o'clock, here in Fort Collins, Colorado. You've been listening to David Katzmeier talking about the cycles of time, how the emotional, physical, intellectual cycles that govern us on an individual level, on a biorhythmic level, also govern not only our families, our communities, but also our nation and the world. David, we've got, what, 6 months, nine months before the spring of 2012. Should we be preparing for some more crisis? I mean, in terms of what you're explaining here tonight, it seems that it seems that the corporations falling apart, the financial houses falling apart, the banking industry, well, that's just financial houses, banking industry, the housing market falling apart. This is all part of what is going on a larger cycle.
You have to clear the way to make a new. I mean, we can't keep doing business as usual, and you keep doing what you've been doing, you'll keep getting what you've gotten, and it's not time for that anymore. The ones that are surviving the transition are the ones that are moving away from the old models into the new. China's an exemplar of that, and they already are the world leader, and they're going to continue to rise. India, don't underestimate them, because China is rising on the newly emerging intellectual cycle, but India is rising on a newly emerging emotional cycle. So keep an eye on them as well. Now, Don't let all the news about China distract you from the emergence of India.
So isn't it also something that I've read, or perhaps you and I have discussed, that there's a power shift every 500 years?
Yes, and this has been identified by the Foundation for the Study of Cycles, and cycles researcher Richard Mogi has spoken about it, that they have documentation that shows there's a general power shift between the East and the West about every 500 years. I would like to refine that. I find that the power shift happens between East and West every 528 years. 528 years is the duration of the intellectual cycle, China, rises with the intellectual cycle of every 528 years, because there's such an intellectually based nature of their culture and of their creation. And, you know, hey, brilliance is fashionable again. So during the intellectual lull of these past two centuries, China was referred to as the sleeping dragon. Have you ever heard that term?
Oh,
about
yes.
China?
Uh-huh.
That was what they're called. They're not called that anymore. Why? Because the intellectual cycle is rising now, and it will continue to rise, so will China.
So 528 years ago, China was also at a, or more predominant.
Just emerging anew. Again, yes. 528 years ago, China was coming into preeminence and so forth. So, and up and down it goes, and...
It all makes sense in the cycle of time, but for most of us, we are caught up in the moment, and we panic. I mean, we look at all these crises, and it's affecting our health, our mental, emotional health, our levels of addictions, family dysfunction, divorce rates, correct?
Yes. Yes, that's true. There's a difference between responding to a situation and reacting to it. I believe that once we understand that these things may be all part of a natural cycle, we're more likely to respond to it instead of react, because we won't be thinking, well, it's not the norm, it's not the way it's supposed to be, and everything like that. And, you know, you were mentioning how women were perceived with their changes and hormonal cycles and everything like that, because they were not fitting the mood. Why would you be in a different mood one day versus the next? And now we're beginning to understand that not only are cycles not a curse, they are our blessing. If you were going to sail from New York to London, would you try to sail in a straight line across the sea? Well, only if you're an idiot. If you,
okay.
I don't mean to be harsh, but I'm not being harsh because nobody does it, so I'm not insulting anyone. To sail from New York to London, you would take into account the trade winds and the ocean currents, and you'll get there faster.
And the same thing with life.
That's the cycles of nature.
And living with the cycles of nature is crucial. How does this tie into the Mayan calendar? That is saying
the Mayan
that-
calendar that we're following is a long count of some 5,125 years long. And they count in their base 20 system. We've discovered the stela, the stones with the carvings. Many of the records were lost, unfortunately, during a physical high intellectual low, by the way. And we know that this cycle of more than 5,000 years is going to end on December 21st, 2012. There's nothing in the surviving records of the Maya that says, suggests in any way that this is the end of the world or that it's even going to be a crisis when that happens. Case in point, the last time the Mayan long count ended, the last time the Mayan calendar ended, was on August 31st, 3113 BC. And we don't have any historic record of a terrible calamity happening at that time.
And
so, don't worry.
Okay, so don't worry, he says. So, that's good to know. I can go home now. But no, but here's the deal. And so we're not going to, the Mayan calendar does not mean the end all, but what is happening is this shift that's taking place up till December of 2012, December 21st, 2012, and all of this, the crossover points and the crumbling of the physical still, well, with the rise of the emotional and the intellectual. And what we are seeing, instead of internalizing as crisis and it's the end of the world and the doom and gloom that we're all living with and we're fed through the media, is actually part of a natural process to emerge into a new cycle of time.
Absolutely. A mother giving birth to a child would never imagine that the birth pangs that she's going through on that day would be the pain that she's experiencing in her life. And she doesn't say this is going to be the end of everything. She says, I'm going to get through this birth. It's going to be a new life. We're going to get through this transition, and it's going to be a new era.
Yeah, I got an email or so read something about, and God said this too shall pass. He didn't say this is how it would always be.
And in the book of Ecclesiastes, we know that for every time there is a season.
We just have a few minutes left, David. And of course, again, I thank you so much because this has been the basis of my work, as it has been your work, and of course the work we do together now through the Cycles Research Institute. But I mean, are there some things that you would really like to stress to our listeners tonight that are important that will help us prepare in the final year of this 12-year cycle?
Become the change you would like to see in the world. And as you become that change, explore self-realization. Because when you explore that, you realize yourself, you realize the world around you.
And that was beautiful and well said. And I think understanding these things will help lift the stress off of our shoulders individually, collectively, knowing that we are part of the cycles of time, and that time marches on. And that cycles live forever, last forever.
They are inveterate, and there's rhythms within rhythms. We're part of the process. There are cycles within us and around us. So if we can understand how we change, we can have the intelligence, the emotional intelligence, to understand the world around us. Remember, any cycle is too great for you to see, go through it, all of its phases, can be understood when you conceive of it in smaller models. And in the case of civilization, the smaller models are us.
And the smaller models are us. And brilliant and well said. So from 2012 on, what do you perceive, just as with your tracking these things?
Some of these things are already evident, the continuing rise of China and of India, and a less of a tendency towards war, and less of a tendency towards territorial gain. A massive cleanup of the industrial problems and waste that have resulted, and brilliant alternatives to the things that we do now that are destructive. Also, the explorations to the planets, that's going to take off like crazy.
So as we keep saying, we've left our children nothing. We're financially broke. We're in debt to the tune of trillions of dollars. We've left the globe, our environment, our world is a trash bag. This too shall
pass. Our children will be richer. What good is it to have coins in your pocket when you don't have the understanding of yourself, or someone who picks up a bottle because they can buy the most expensive whiskey around? And they can turn to drugs and snort cocaine off of a platinum table in a penthouse that they drove to in their sports car if they do not have the serenity and the peace of mind. Mother Teresa said that when she was asked what was one of the most desolate countries that she had been to, because she has traveled and helped the poor in so many places, she said the United States, because of the emotional state. Our children will be richer and less materialistic. And so once you go beyond having what you need for shelter and to sleep and to have food and to have comfort and to be able to go to the doctor or whatever, what much more beyond that do you need? Well, what you need is a home, not just a house. And you need to develop your mind. Deepak Chopra says we're coming now from survival of the fittest to survival of the wisest. Welcome that for the next two centuries. You're going to see a lot more.
David Katzmeyer, thank you very much. We will certainly have you back on Holy Hormones, Honey.
Thank you, Leslie.
With just a minute left, just going to tell you who's coming up next week. September 19th, Dr. Marianne Marchese, author of 8 Weeks to Women's Wellness, The Detoxification Plan for Breast Cancer, Endometriosis, Infertility, and Other Women's Health Conditions. That's coming up next Monday night on Holy Hormones, Honey, The Greatest Story Never Told. Thank you so much for listening tonight. Coming up next, Rhythms of Youth with Vincent Burkhart. I'm Leslie Bothy, your host. Good night, everyone, and blessings.
This is KRFC Fort Collins. She holds you captivated in a pound. Suddenly
Welcome to the KRFC studios, KRFC Fort Collins. Vincent Burkhart, your host for this edition of Rhythms of Youth. Hello, everybody.
Yo, Vincent.
Hello. Hello.
I recognize Del Graham Hayes.
Oh, hello.
You're Vincent. Back again. Look
I
at that.
I know. It's incredible.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, buddy. Thanks for being here, Del.
I'm very glad to be here.
Yeah, we have Patty Fiasco of the Patty Fiasco Band. Hello, Patty.
Hello, hello.
Hey, this is real exciting. Thanks for being here.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here.
And hearing you warm up, it was just terrific. So big treat for us having you in here tonight.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
We have Matthew Savage in here with us as well. Hello, Matthew.
Howdy.
Matthew is a student at Windsor High School. He's 16 years of age. I want to go around and actually also I want to say hello to Megan Noel.
Hey, Vince.
You are soon to be a Live at Lunch host.
I am.
And a great, great volunteer in town with KRC and SpokesBuzz and the Bohemian Foundation, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah,
am. Thanks for being here. You're sitting in the comfy chair.
It's nice to actually kind of be sitting in the host chair. It gives me a taste of what I'm going to be soon looking at. So.
Yeah, you're gonna be awesome at
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Also, I just want to say hello to Lindsay. Matthew's sister is hanging out with us here in the studio. She's taking some photos. So thank you for being here as well, Lindsay. I want to go around and ask you each who you'd like to give a shout out to. Mr. Dell?
I want to give a shout out to my brother.
Very nice. Look at that. Concise. Look at that. How about you, Patty?
Well, hopefully Pam Kraft is listening. Chris Johnson and the boys of the Patty Fiasco. Howdy. Hey, boys.
Hey, boys. PattyFiasco.net is your website, and we'll be talking more about that. Thanks, Patty. How about you, Matthew?
I'd like to give a shout-out to my cousin, Preston, because, well, he asked for one, so this is for you.
Very cool. And then the first time for you on the radio, Matthew.
It is.
Very cool. Patty, you've been on the Live at Lunch studio before.
Yes. Yes, we have.
Very cool. Hey, Megan, anybody you want to give a shout-out to?
Well, I'd actually like to give a shout-out to you. I don't think I'd be here today if it wasn't for you and volunteering with KRFC, so...
I concur with that statement as well.
Yeah. Vincent.
Yeah, go, Vincent.
A labor
Four
of love.
Four shout-outs to Vincent.
Very cool. Very nice. Well, we're going to hop into some music here. We have some great music lined up here tonight, and Del, we're going to start with you, mister.
Oh, wonderful.
What are you going to play for us?
I'm going to play a song called Starry-Eyed Woman, and it's about a girl who... I had no chance with.
Until you wrote this song.
Until I wrote this song, yeah. Right. She's gonna come back to me.
The saxophone, throw him a dime, he is all alone. Play a game with his refrain. All right. If I could just see your eyes five more times. Baby, if you come down, I won't be surprised.